Bitcatcher Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. You know, if you've ever seen someone operating at a really, really high level, like maybe a surgeon or a coder or, yeah, even an athlete doing something just transcendent, you know that feeling, watching real mastery. Today, we're kind of diving into that feeling itself through David Foster Wallace's collection of essays on tennis string theory.
Right. And look, if you're thinking, oh, tennis, not for me, hold on. Because this deep dive is really about why string theory isn't just about tennis. Not really. It's more like Wallace uses the court as this this perfect little lab to explore huge ideas.
Right.
Excellence, what drives perfectionism, the cost of being truly great.
So it's kind of a shortcut, you're saying, to understanding the human side of competition, maybe in any field.
Exactly. The mental game behind peak performance. It's incredibly relevant today.
Okay, let's unpack this. So David Foster Wallace, DFW, most people probably know him from his huge novel, Infinite Jest, right? Born 1962, passed away in 2008. He had this reputation for being intensely smart, like philosophy, math, that kind of level, but also incredibly human and observant. But why tennis? Why him?
Well, that's the key. He wasn't just some intellectual looking in from the outside. Wallace was actually a pretty serious junior tennis player himself, grew up in the Midwest.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, nationally ranked, I believe.
Yeah.
He called himself a near great, meaning, you know, he got close enough to the pro level to really feel what that kind of talent and dedication involves. He wasn't just watching it.
Ah, okay. So he had the player's perspective, that sort of embodied knowledge, plus the analytical brain.
Precisely. Hmm. He understood the geometry of the court, the physical toll, the sheer mental battle of it all from the inside, and combined that with this really sharp critical mind.
And didn't he also struggle personally with things like perfectionism?
He did. And his own experiences with that and with mental health gave him this deep empathy, I think, for the kind of pressure these elite athletes are under. It's not just abstract for him.
So that dual perspective player and thinker is what makes his writing on this so unique.
Yeah, totally. He could see the technique, the psychology, and maybe even something, I don't know, almost metaphysical about it all.
Okay.
So the core idea behind string theory, Wallace is basically saying tennis, with its defined space, its rules, its intense focus on the individual, it's like a perfect microcosm.
A microcosm for?
Well, bigger human things, like competition, sure, but also dealing with pressure, isolation, striving, even transcendence. The court becomes a sort of simplified model for life's struggles.
Okay, so it's way more than just sports writing. It's using tennis to get at something deeper about, like, the human condition.
Exactly. It's about illuminating all the stuff that happens inside the player's head. The stuff we spectators just don't see, the psychological grind, the emotional weight, sometimes even the financial struggle.
Right, the hidden costs of trying to be the best.
Yeah, and that's why it's not just for tennis fans. I mean, if you're interested in what excellence looks like, what it feels like, yeah, in any field, business, arts, science, whatever, this book has something really profound to say.
It takes you inside that mindset.
It really does.
Okay, so let's get into the essays themselves, because they each tackle a different angle, right? It starts with Derivative Sport in Tornado Alley.
Yes, that's him looking back at his own youth, his teenage obsession with tennis. And what's fascinating is how he frames it initially almost like a pure abstract system.
Like math.
Kinda, yeah. Geometry, lines, angles. Mm-hmm. The court is this perfect logical space. But then reality intrudes.
Which is the Tornado Alley part.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He grew up playing in Illinois, dealing with this crazy, unpredictable wind. And the wind just messes everything up. It forces players to abandon the textbook, the perfect theory, and just adapt.
Ah, so the ideal versus the messy reality.
Right. You're fighting the conditions, the chaos, as much as your opponent. It immediately grounds all the abstract stuff in, you know, sweat and effort and frustration.
Okay. Then the next one. How Tracy Austin Broke My Heart. That sounds personal.
It is, but not in the way you might think. It's actually a critique of her autobiography.
Yeah.
But he uses it to make this really crucial point about what he calls nonverbal genius.
Nonverbal genius.
Yeah. His argument is that what makes athletes like Austin truly great operates faster than thought, faster than language. It's instinct, physical intuition.
So he's critiquing her book because she couldn't explain her genius well enough.
Kind of. He points out that great athletes often rely on cliches when they talk about their game one point at a time, that sort of thing. And Wallace says, well, maybe we're wrong to expect them to be articulate geniuses too.
Huh. Like their brilliance is in the doing, not the explaining.
Exactly. He calls them geniuses of the body. Their focus is so absolute on the physical act, maybe the part of the brain that does deep verbal analysis just isn't engaged in the same way during play or even after.
That's a really interesting take. It flips the script on how we judge athletes' interviews.
Totally. Then he shifts gears completely. He goes from superstar like Austin to this guy, Michael Joyce. The essay's title is something like Tennis Player Michael Joyce's Professional Artistry.
And Joyce was.
He was a journeyman pro, ranked like 79th in the world at the time Wallace wrote about him. Definitely not a household name.
Okay, so why focus on him?
To show the other side of pro tennis. The relentless grind, the financial insecurity. Wallace details how Joyce is constantly scrambling for flights, for hotels. It's not glamorous.
It's about the nobility of the struggle.
Precisely. It's celebrating the sheer hard work, the professional artistry, as he calls it, required just to hang in there at that level. It's a powerful counterpoint to our obsession with seemingly effortless superstars. It honors the dignity of just grinding it out.
Wow. Okay, so we have the theory, the nonverbal genius, the grind, and then comes Federer.
Ah, yes. Federer, both flesh and not. This one, I mean, is probably one of the most famous pieces of sports writing ever.
That's the core of it.
It's Wallace watching Roger Federer play and trying to describe what he sees as basically a religious experience. He talks about these Federer moments.
Moments like shots.
Shots that just seem impossible, like they defy physics, where the power and grace are so extreme, so efficient, it feels otherworldly.
He calls it kinetic beauty, right?
That's the term. It's where this absolute peak of physical efficiency and grace under pressure somehow transforms into, well, into art. Something sublime.
It makes you think, how does that happen? How does sport become art?
Wallace doesn't necessarily give a neat answer, but he evokes the feeling of witnessing it, seeing the human body do things that seem to push the boundaries of possibility, but with beauty.
Incredible. And the last essay sort of zooms out again, democracy in the tournament.
Yeah, that one's with the U.S. Open. He turns his kind of cultural critic eye on the whole spectacle, the crowds, the commerce, the hype.
So the tension between the actual game and the machine around it.
Exactly. He looks at the sheer scale of it, the corporate sponsorships, the media frenzy, and contrasts that with the, you know, the purity of the one-on-one contest happening on the court.
Like how this meritocratic battle gets packaged and sold.
Right. He sees the democratic element. Anyone can buy a ticket.
Yeah.
But he's also critical of how the raw athleticism gets filtered through this massive commercial lens.
Okay, so pulling these threads together, the geometry, the bodily genius, the journeyman's grind, Federer's art, the commercial spectacle. What are the big takeaways, the core themes here?
Well, one huge one has to be the psychology of excellence.
Yeah.
Wallace makes it clear that success at this level isn't just physical skill. It's maybe primarily mental.
Like mental toughness, focus.
Absolutely. Managing pressure, self-control, dealing with anxiety second by second. You know, that relates to everything, right?
Yeah.
Big presentations, deadlines, any high-stakes situation.
Yeah, definitely. What else?
Then there's the idea of athletics as aesthetics. High-level tennis for Wallace isn't just sport. It's a form of genuine artistic expression.
Like appreciating the beauty in pure function.
Kind of. Think about a really skilled surgeon or an architect's design.
Uh-huh.
There's an artistry in that kind of mastery, too.
Yeah.
Wallace finds it on the tennis court.
Okay, that makes sense.
A third theme, and maybe a darker one, is about isolation and connection. That intense focus, the self-reliance needed to get to the top, it often comes at a cost.
The lonely life of the long-distance runner, but for tennis.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Balancing that single-minded ambition with, you know, relationships, normal life. It's a constant tension he explores.
Mm. And finally,
probably the cost of perfectionism, which ties back to his own struggles, I think. That relentless drive for excellence.
Yeah.
It can easily tip over into obsession, into real psychological strain. Needs managing.
These are definitely themes that go way beyond tennis.
For sure.
Wallace also has these lines that just stick with you. Any particular quotes or key ideas from the book that really stand out?
Oh, absolutely. One of his most famous is, "The best metaphor I know for being a human being is being a tennis player."
Wow. What do you think he means by that?
I think it captures that feeling of being out there, alone, under scrutiny, responsible for every single shot, every mistake, that individual struggle, point by point. It feels like life sometimes, doesn't it?
It really does. Okay, what's another one?
How about this idea? Beauty is not the goal of competitive sports, but high-level sports are a prime venue for the expression of human beauty.
Ah, right. The artistry isn't the point, but it happens anyway.
Exactly. It's like this incredible byproduct of striving for pure effectiveness and mastery. The beauty emerges from the function.
Love that.
And then there's the whole concept we touched on earlier, that great athletes are these geniuses of the body, and we shouldn't be surprised when their attempts to explain how they do it sound, well, a bit cliche.
Because their genius isn't verbal.
Right. Their brilliance is happening on a different level,
yeah.
One that maybe doesn't translate easily into words.
Okay, one more.
Let's see. Oh, this one about total immersion. The best players seem to view tennis not as a game, but as a reality with its own physics, geometry, and meteorology.
Whoa. Like they inhabit a completely different world when they play.
Yeah, that's the idea. That level of focus, that total commitment. It's like the court is their reality. That's what mastery demands.
So thinking about listeners, how can we actually use these ideas? What are some real-life applications?
Well, the first one is pretty direct. Managing performance anxiety. We can actually borrow strategies from how these players stay focused under pressure.
Like focusing on the process, not the result.
Exactly. Concentrate on the next small step, the immediate task, rather than getting overwhelmed by the final outcome. That works for exams, job interviews, you name it.
Good tip. What else?
The Michael Joyce essay gives us a great lens for appreciating invisible work. You know, actively look for and value the hard, unglamorous effort that people put in all around us.
The journeymen in our own workplaces or communities.
Right. Celebrate that dedication, that professional artistry, not just the flashy successes.
Yeah.
It fosters a healthier perspective, I think.
Definitely. And from the U.S. Open piece.
That teaches us about critical consumption. Just being more aware of the hype, the packaging, the commercial interests surrounding experiences, whether it's sports or entertainment or even news.
Trying to see past the spectacle to the core experience.
Yeah. Look for the substance beneath the surface noise and the advertising. Be a more mindful consumer of, well, everything.
Those are really practical takeaways.
I think so. It's about applying that Wallace-level observation to our own lives.
For me, what was really surprising, or maybe what I loved most reading this, was how it completely changed how I watch sports, or really how I watch any kind of high-level skill. It's not just passive watching anymore. It feels more like active appreciation. You understand a little more about the immense effort, the mental fortitude, the artistry involved. You see the struggle behind the grace.
That's beautifully put. And I think Wallace's lasting contribution here is showing that sports can be a subject for serious thought. For philosophy, even. He finds these profound truths about human striving, about pushing limits, right there on the court, as deep as anything in literature or art.
Which leaves us with maybe a final thought to chew on. The book really digs into this idea that excellence often requires intense focus, maybe even isolation. So it makes you wonder, in your own pursuits, your own life, where's that line? The line between necessary dedication and maybe destructive loneliness. Something to think about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.